take a deep breath. Feels good, right? But did you ever stop to think about what you're inhaling? Oxygen is one of those things that we take for granted, but for a good chunk of Earth's history, the planet didn't actually have any oxygen at all.
That's according to our next guest, who's researching how Earth went from having no oxygen to becoming an oxygen-rich planet full of life. And in a new book, he fills us in on the history of the gas, what it tells us about the world around us, and what the future might hold for the planet's air.
Donald Canfield is a professor of ecology at the University of Southern Denmark and director of the Nordic Center for Earth Evolution. His new book is Oxygen, A 4 Billion Year History. Donald, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
You point out that oxygen is something that we all take for granted, but once we stop and think about it, how much can we learn about the world around us from oxygen?
Well, I like to think about it in a historical perspective. The whole world around us is basically driven by oxygen production and the utilization of oxygen. So I think if we want to understand the world as it is, oxygen is a central component of that understanding.
Why is that?
Well, if you think about it like this, 99% of the energy that is used and on this planet, actually, by a lot of biology on this planet, comes from the production of oxygen by plants. Well, the oxygen is a byproduct, but it comes from plant production. So basically, the food webs of the Earth are driven by oxygen production. We breathe oxygen. Dogs, cats, you know, all sorts of animals breathe oxygen, all sorts of microbes breathe oxygen. So it actually drives a good bit of the biology on the Earth. So oxygen is incredibly important for shaping the planet as we understand it.
How much of our atmosphere right now is oxygen?
It's 21% right now.
21%. And, you know, I wonder how many people would be surprised by that amount and actually think, well, geez, I thought it was a lot more than that. Where are we observing oxygen in our atmosphere in that 21%?
It's pretty much evenly distributed throughout the atmosphere. So it's 21% pretty much everywhere.
So, I mean, it's in the air. It's also, you know, is it in the land, you know, where on Earth?
Okay, I see. No, oh, good question. No, oxygen is 21% in the air, but there are many environments on the Earth. In fact, you don't have to go very, very far into mud. I like to study gooey, sticky, smelly mud that sits on the bottom of the ocean. You only have to go in some of this stuff only a millimeter or two before oxygen is gone. So there are lots and lots and lots of places on the Earth where you don't find any oxygen whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't always that way, though. What did the Earth look like many, many years ago, and how much oxygen was in our atmosphere at that time?
Well, you have to go many, 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 many years. But if you went back, let's say, 3 billion years ago, okay, we throw numbers around like that, like they weren't a big deal. 3 billion years is about two-thirds of the history of the planet back in time. There would have been virtually no oxygen in the atmosphere. And by virtually no oxygen in the atmosphere, I mean less than 100,000 times of what we have in the present atmosphere now. So it was basically an oxygen-free world.
So tell us how it came to be. How was it originally created, and how did the Earth eventually change?
Well, this is a very long story, but I'll try to make it as short as possible. Oxygen ultimately was produced by organisms called cyanobacteria. You could view them as the ancestors to the plants that we're probably more familiar with. So cyanobacteria were the first organisms to produce oxygen on Earth. Curiously enough, when cyanobacteria first evolved and first started to produce oxygen, there was very, very little that accumulated into the atmosphere. And to understand that, we have to understand a little bit about how oxygen gets into the atmosphere. Of course, you would think that oxygen comes from the production of oxygen by plants and cyanobacteria, and that's absolutely true. But whereas cyanobacteria produce oxygen, lots of other organisms, including cyanobacteria, also consume oxygen again. So there's a balance that's almost perfect between the consumption and production of oxygen. And if that balance is so perfect, then very, very little can get into the atmosphere. So it gets into the atmosphere because some oxygen, or not some oxygen, some of the original cyanobacteria, let's say, get buried away in marine mud, and that stuff becomes oil, for example, or carbon in rocks. And that carbon in rocks that represents just a little bit of oxygen that's been put into the atmosphere. So that started to happen as soon as cyanobacteria evolved. But the problem was is that there were also lots of gases coming out of the Earth, like hydrogen, for example, that consumed what little oxygen cyanobacteria actually produced and liberated to the atmosphere. And way, way, way back in Earth history, this gas liberation was much, much faster than it is now. So try as cyanobacteria would to make as much oxygen as they could, there was very, very little that could, in fact, accumulate in the atmosphere way back then.
Wow. I'm curious how you, as a scientist, have come about figuring that all out. How do you study ancient atmosphere?
Well, it hasn't just been me, I can tell you that. Lots of people have done this. But we get our clues from rocks, mainly. And you know, you pick up a rock, and the kind of rocks we look at are rocks that used to be sediment deposited in the oceans, so marine muds, and you look at some of this stuff, and it may not tell you a whole lot just to look at it, but when you start to chemically analyze the components in the rocks, they start to tell a great deal. There are signals in these rocks, for example, that can tell you whether or not there was oxygen around in the atmosphere. And other signals which begin to tell you a little bit about how much. So if you have a lot of clever people working on this problem and thinking real hard about it, then they're actually able to tease out these chemical signals from the rocks and learn a great deal about the history of the Earth's atmosphere.
Now, a lot of what we discuss in terms of the Earth's history and, you know, even the creation of Earth is often debated in the public sphere. I'm wondering if there's a debate about this at all, either in the public sphere or in your profession.
Well, sure. I guess it depends on what you think the debate will be. Among scientists, the history of oxygen gets widely debated. I think there's a general consensus that oxygen levels were actually quite low before about 2.4 billion years ago. That seems to be pretty well appreciated now. What is less clear is when cyanobacteria actually first evolved and when they first started to produce oxygen into the atmosphere. And that's actually highly critical because that makes the history much, much richer. I'm of the school that cyanobacteria actually evolved well before this 2.4 billion year time period. So there was this period, as I explained just a few minutes ago, where there was active oxygen production by cyanobacteria, but very, 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 very little in the atmosphere. So there's a great deal of debate about that, and you know, as there is in science, there's a great deal of debate about many, many aspects of the history, and we maybe can come to some of that as we go along in the interview.
Donald, we're talking with Donald Canfield. He's a professor of ecology at the University of Southern Denmark and director of the Nordic Center for Earth Evolution. His book is Oxygen, A 4 Billion Year History.
And you can give us a call on this at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have about oxygen and the world that we live in? You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Donald Canfield about the history and evolution of oxygen on Earth. And you can join our conversation as well. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Donald, just before the break, you were starting a thought, and I'd like you to pick up where you left off there.
Well, I was just sort of describing what some of the controversies are and related to the history of atmospheric oxygen. I think one of the real big ones, which I think is quite interesting, is the relationship between oxygen and the evolution of animals, which happened about 600 million years ago. And There's some geochemical evidence. That means there's evidence in sediments to suggest that oxygen levels might have risen in the atmosphere at about that time. And that actually becomes really, really interesting, because one of the popular discussions about the late emergence of animals is that animals have a requirement for rather high oxygen levels, and that an increase in oxygen might have actually enabled animals to be able to thrive in the environment. So it's been discussed that this rise in oxygen that we seem to detect at around 600 million years ago might have actually enabled, if not the original evolution of animals, at least the evolution of large animals, which do have rather high oxygen requirements. And I've actually, oddly enough, researched on both sides of this fence, because we've contributed some of the evidence for an increase in oxygen at this time, but we've also lately been thinking a little bit harder about it and trying to explore actually what are the oxygen requirements for early evolved animals. And we've been working with sponges, and sponges are believed to be some of the very, very first types of animals that evolved, and we've been looking at the oxygen requirements for sponges, and it's actually astonishingly low. They need very, very little oxygen, indeed, in order to be able to survive. So our idea that an increase in oxygen 600 million years ago might have actually paced the evolution of early animals may in fact be incorrect. That other factors, likely just biological evolutionary factors, might have been inhibited or kept animals from evolving until rather late in Earth history.
Wow. Let's take a call first. I'm going to give the phone number one more time. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Let's talk to Neil in Slinger.
Okay.
Hi, Neil.
Hi. I got a question. The atmospheric oxygen is around 20-some percent. When I go to the doctor and they check my blood oxygen, it's up to around 95%. How do animals and or humans increase that level in the bloodstream?
That's a really good question, and I don't have a really good answer for it. My guess is that what happens is your blood selects the oxygen out of the atmosphere. So the atmosphere is 21% oxygen and then mainly nitrogen after that. And the hemoglobin in your blood will preferentially select the nitrogen or the oxygen, leaving the nitrogen behind. That would be my guess.
Thanks for that call, Neil. Daniel, or Donald, I'm wondering why oxygen in particular is so important to life on Earth. Why not maybe some of those other noble gases like hydrogen, nitrogen? You know, why did oxygen make it, why was oxygen crucial in the evolution of life on Earth?
Okay, that's actually a really interesting question. You need a compound which is able to react with other compounds in something called an oxidation reduction reaction. Hydrogen can do that, and in fact, hydrogen might have been a very, very important compound driving life early in Earth history before oxygen. But the thing about oxygen is that it's just simply so energetic. It's about the most energetic compound you can have to react, for example, with organic matter. So it gives so much energy, and plus it's freely available in the atmosphere. It's easy to access, but it just becomes the compound of choice for life.
Take us back 2.3 billion years ago. The Earth hit a tipping point for oxygen. What happened, and how did that event change everything?
Okay, well, here's another one of those things which is widely discussed among the community. But for me, I think the best explanation is that remember I mentioned that there were lots of gases, reducing gases coming out of the mantle, hydrogen being the main culprit, and that was keeping oxygen low. Well, the history of the Earth is actually very, very interesting, and one important aspect, and that is that the Earth has been cooling through its history. It was very much warmer earlier in its history. And as the Earth has been cooling, its mantle, which is the layer of Earth underneath the crust that we live on, has been slowing down in its convection and its circulation. So that means that there's less volcanic activity through time. And volcanic activity is what delivers hydrogen to the atmosphere. So the idea is that about 2.3 billion years ago, the volcanic activity of the Earth decreased to the point where the hydrogen flux decreased to the point that oxygen could begin to accumulate. And I actually like that explanation very much. I think it gives a rational reason for why oxygen would have increased at about that time.
You know, one topic that I think about as I consider your book here is global climate change and carbon dioxide emissions and how that's become an issue here for our world today. How do you see oxygen playing a role, I guess, in the continued evolution of our Earth's atmosphere, given that given the increase in carbon dioxide emissions?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. It's been within the last 15 years or so that people have been able to measure the oxygen concentration to enough sensitivity to be able to see the influence of anthropogenic activity on it. And it is fascinating because what you see is an annual cycle of oxygen increasing a little bit due to photosynthesis in the summer and decreasing a little bit due to net respiration in the winter. And you can also see the oxygen levels dropping ever so slightly in response to the burning of fossil fuels, but the reality is that those changes are extremely small, and that global climate change, or let's say the burning of fossil fuels, will have very, very little impact on the levels of atmospheric oxygen over centuries, millennia, I would say. So over thousands of years anyway, the levels of oxygen in the atmosphere are going to be very, very stable.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So we don't have to, what's one thing we don't have to worry about?
Well, that's nice. Yeah. You know, meanwhile, I'm sure scientists are grappling with greenhouse gases and global climate change. Is there a way to, in a sense, extract oxygen to, I don't know, offset some of the negative elements of our atmosphere?
Well, I mean, you can easily extract oxygen from the atmosphere, but I'm not sure how that would help.
As
a gas, oxygen isn't one of the greenhouse gases, so it's not something that influences the what's called the radiative balance of the Earth. So I'm not sure that would help anything. Plus, there's so much oxygen in the atmosphere that to be able to change the concentrations would be devastatingly difficult. I mean, if all of the fossil fuels that we've burned over the last hundreds of years have only changed it to minuscule amounts, you know, we'd have a very, very difficult time changing it if we wanted to.
How can research like yours be used by organizations like NASA, who might be searching for planets that could be conducive to life?
Well, that's another really good question. I think that when I sit back and I think about the Earth, I think about what a variety of very, very special events have allowed Earth to be able to accumulate oxygen into its atmosphere. I mean, it required first the evolution of cyanobacteria, which wasn't such a straightforward thing. I mean, cyanobacteria first evolved after a variety of other types of photosynthetic bacteria, first evolved types that don't produce oxygen. So that whole process took some time and some evolutionary development. And then the interesting point that we've been discussing is that even after cyanobacteria evolved and started producing oxygen, then the levels of oxygen remained very, very low for a long period of time until the Earth started to behave to the point where oxygen could first accumulate. So I think that as a vehicle for looking for life, looking for oxygen actually might not be such a good thing to focus on because there are lots of life forms on the Earth and presumably other places, if there is life there that don't require oxygen. And even after oxygen-producing organisms have evolved on Earth, and let's say, presuming that they might have evolved somewhere else, it's not clear that you'd be able to see the oxygen in the atmosphere. But on the other side, if you were to find a planet that did contain oxygen in appreciable amounts, that would tell you, I think, a lot of very, very important things about both the biology and the physical nature of the planet, which would be extremely exciting.
For something so common as oxygen, it would seem like all the questions that we have about it have been answered. What mysteries are you still trying to solve about oxygen?
Well, there's so much that we really need to understand. I've sort of summarized in this book what I think we understand to now, but you know there are huge parts of the geologic record which are very, very difficult to understand because the record is so spotty. You know, there are hundreds of millions of years of missing time where we need to try to fill in. If you were to ask me what was the level of atmospheric oxygen 1.5 billion years ago, for example, I'd say, well, probably about 10% of what it is now. Well, it might have been 1%, and it might have been 25%, you know, given the ability we have to interpret the signals that we have. So our understanding isn't as constrained as one would like.
Well, Donald, I'm so sorry. You have a lot of interesting points. We're actually out of time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Donald Canfield is a professor of ecology at the University of Southern Denmark and director of the Nordic Center for Earth Evolution. His new book is Oxygen, A 4 Billion Year History.